Well, look who found the Ataris. Thank you for the reminding me of who that was that did the remake of Don Henley's Boys of Summer. This is Up North News. I'm Pat Kreitlow, and I'm joined now by Angela Lang of Block, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities, and by their on their own website, you'll see them say that they provide the tools, training, and resources to help Milwaukee's Black community build long-term political power. We're going to talk about what that means, how does it happen, and then, you know, how do we take those lessons in, you know, say a rural district of Wisconsin? What are the parallels to take away? Because in both cases, as I learned from serving, you know, with legislators from Milwaukee, we both have kids that need educations that come from low-income areas. Well, we both need the roads, you know, to be smooth and work. So let's try to look for those parallels and build some bridges. Angela, nice to see you here. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
I do want to learn more about, you know, Block from square one for folks that are not familiar with it. But we are, of course, this week, you know, reacting to the primary election results. We're heading into the general election campaign. We know that, you know, Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes was active in the community before he was in the legislature, before he was Lieutenant Governor, before he became the, you know, the state Democratic nominee for the United States Senate. And yet, you know, the questions come up repeatedly about that magic word electability in a state that is, you know, has so much large rural white areas. And I love your Twitter feed, and I love that you went to it and said, "Can we get rid of that word now?" Why'd you say that?
Yeah, I think some of my frustration is hearing people only refer and have this conversation about electability only when it comes to Black candidates. And let's be honest, we know the demographics of our state. You know, there's Milwaukee and southeastern Wisconsin, and then it feels like there's the rest of the state. And I think a lot of folks feel that if you're only catering to Milwaukee, which largely is code for only catering to Black and brown people, that is a losing message and is not a message that'll resonate across the rest of the state. And so for me, you know, seeing that be kind of an excuse as to not support a Black candidate, we kind of see that electability is seen as the new dog whistle. And, you know, we see someone like Dr. Kaz Bowers over at All in Wisconsin that is talking about that, that is saying this is the new dog whistle in Wisconsin. And so, you know, for me to see people, not only like Lieutenant Governor Barnes advance to the primary for the Senate, but also you see people like Darren Madison as well, who be a strong candidate, the mayor of Glendale, to be a state representative. And so this kind of concept of electability, which we only have when we're talking about Black candidates, seems to now be debunked, and people need to find another reason to not support Black candidates and can't use the guise of electability anymore.
Talking to Evan Goyke last hour, and he was saying that it was actually a good week for a couple of assembly races and for the sheriff's race, I gather, as well.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we see a history-making moment with the sheriff here in Milwaukee. We have elected now our first Black woman to be sheriff. And so I think there's just all of these different examples of how Black folks are actually having a seat at the table, are able to build long-term political power and to have this representation. And I know that probably makes some folks uncomfortable. It's a change. But at the same time, representation is so important. As, you know, Mandela says, if you want to change DC, you have to change the people that we send to DC. And I think being able to have that lived experience with representation also matters.
Do feel free to push back on this as a middle-aged white guy in northern Wisconsin. I understand I'm not drawing a direct parallel, other than to say that, you know, the whole electability buzzword was really bandied about in 2012 when Tammy Baldwin was running for U.S. Senate. And, oh, can this, you know, lesbian from Madison, you know, elite, blah, 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 really represent us? Mm-hmm. And, you know, she won somewhat narrowly and then really, really proved herself. And again, I'm not saying apples and apples necessarily, but I've certainly known Mandela Barnes well enough to see the parallel of how he can follow that Tammy Baldwin track and have a lot of people go, "This guy's not what I thought, and I'm really liking this."
Yeah, absolutely. And I remember, you know, Senator Baldwin's race in 2012. I remember how excited I was, and I was in college, and I had been following her career before then. And I think, you know, hearing that electability, that was the first time I heard about it. Like, oh, well, can she, you know, it'll be history making, it's groundbreaking. Is Wisconsin ready? I think is a lot of kind of the conversations. And then to hear, you know, not only Senator Baldwin win, but also to see her reelection in 2018. I remember the midterm that night, and I feel like they called Tammy Baldwin's race in about 7 or 8 minutes while the rest of us stayed up till about 1 or 2 in the morning until they decided the gubernatorial race. And I think, you know, the reflections off of that is that change sometimes makes people uncomfortable. You know, we're living in such polarized times that are we actually able to live our values, but not do it at the expense of, well, we just need to win by any means necessary. And I think sometimes the winning by any means necessary means compromising our values, having a watered down message, you know, going away from things that are like Black Lives Matter that for some reason are seen as controversial. But I think for us, we need to be pushing ourselves and our candidates and, you know, folks in the Democratic Party to continue to make these changes and these strides, because we don't have a conversation now about talking about if Tammy Baldwin, the first LGBTQ senator from Wisconsin, we don't have that conversation if she's electable anymore, because we've overcome that.
Exactly. But in that sad school of winning by any means possible, we pointed out to our audience a few days back that there was this ad running with five very angry sounding, very scared looking white people. And they were all holding up, you know, a square, you know, kind of a green screen effect. And in there were the images that, you know, are coming. There's Kenosha on fire. There's the Waukesha parade tragedy. There's, you know, then any type of riots. And again, that was not put forward by actual crime victims with actual concerns. Turns out it was a nonprofit group affiliated with the Republican Governors Association, who will do whatever is possible to try to, you know, get Tim Michaels across the finish line and defeat Tony Evers. And I can't imagine how tiring it is to have to fight this every time. But I look back at one of your lines saying that you compared 2020 to being stuck in the game of Jumanji, where every time you turn around, there's another challenge. But I got to think, other times you turn around and it's the same old challenge, the same old imagery, the same old stereotypes that you have to, you know, take aim at.
Yeah, and I'm really glad that you brought that up, because I know exactly what ad you're talking about. Our team is very familiar with that ad, and we definitely cringe every time we see it, and we can't help but to notice that it is largely white folks. And what does that mean? What is the message that we're sending? And, you know, I think there's a lot of us that saw this coming. You know, we were like, Kenosha and the Waukesha tragedy are going to be exploited. The pain and the trauma is going to be exploited for political gain. And I think a lot of us organizers have been talking about it for a year plus. We know the ads are going to get nasty. They're going to get real racist real fast. You know, we already saw some of those dog whistles, and I can imagine that they're going to happen even more. We've seen, you know, some Freudian slips these days where both yes. Former Governor Scott Walker and another member of the Republican Party both kind of made these gaffes in referring to both Mandela Barnes and to current Senator Cory Booker. And instead of calling them radical, they used the word racial. And there was like, oh, that was
quite a typo.
A wrong word to use. And that's what I said. I was like, that's quite a bit of a screw up there. And I think that really kind of is very telling of some of the ads that we're going to see, but also how they truly feel. They're saying the quiet parts out loud.
So, look, there will be that effort to, I mean, let's call it what it is, you know, scare white voters in rural areas. And that is not necessarily your battle. So I want to ask your, you know, your reaction to it, that battle is going to be out there all across, you know, northern Wisconsin. But where Block's power really is working in your own backyard. And again, you talk about the tools, the training and the resources to build long-term political power. What does that mean? And how does that happen?
Yeah. So for us, you know, we're definitely focused on trying to focus on our community the most, community that have been left behind. So we currently have Milwaukee, Racine, and Kenosha is where we have our base right now. And for us, it starts by building a sense of community, by knocking on doors, listening to issues, but then also being able to be a tool and a resource for folks. As our ambassadors are out there knocking in the field, they're able to say, hey, do you know that we have a state Supreme Court race coming up in the spring? Do you know that they're 10-year terms? These are the reasons that we should care. So having those kind of long-term engagements and having this year-round focus is incredibly important. But at the same time, we do understand that while we're focused on our own community, there is very valuable relationships and partnerships that can be had in the rural community as well, because we understand, as you mentioned, what keeps us safe. We understand that we all want good schools. We all want a livable wage job. We all want to be able to thrive. And I think even though we're only focusing on our community, we see that that message is actually very much broader, and that connects with a lot of rural folks as well, too.
Angela Lang is here from BLOC, Black Leaders Organizing for Communities. And in talking about what you do, I'm hearing parallels to our conversation last week with Robert Craig from Citizen Action and other groups that I refer to as democracy's little helpers, because it's no longer enough just to wait every other year for a candidate or a political party to come along. This is year-round work now to convey the importance of issues, to convey the sense of community. At least we think that's what has to happen. The question is it working? Do you feel like this was the right path and that this does pay dividends in the end?
Absolutely. Our model, by being able to have kind of this for us, by us model, and then not going away after every election cycle, really allows us to build deep trust in a community that has been left behind politically. And people really see us as their kind of political and organizing home. And so I really do feel that the only way to actually make this kind of work long term and to be sustainable is to have that year round focus. We can't kind of go away and then try to come back later and say, hey, remember me from 2 years ago or 4 years ago. We're not building relationships. And it's also very transactional, and we want to disrupt that. So absolutely, I'm proud of our model, and I think it works.
Now, there is the potential, and I'm not trying to stir up trouble here, but it just might, when you have essentially hometown groups, and then we've always heard about how people, whether it's parties, national parties, other people, they parachute people in to come and, you know, talk to you. I certainly experienced that, you know, up in this part of the state where I had one message, but suddenly a group that said they were allied with me was knocking on doors and saying something that, you know, wasn't completely the same verse in the same hymnal. Has that been a concern as well over the years?
I think that's always a concern. What I'm seeing now is that I think folks are finally starting to get the message. You kind of can't do that. And so national groups that do want to come in and support specifically Black organizing, they're talking to us. Hey, we want to knock doors here. Let's coordinate on message. What are the issues? And so we're starting to see people understand that they can't just parachute in. And same with the Democratic Party. I have a really good relationship with the chairman, Ben Wickler, and we're able to chat wherever legally allowable, but also at the same time, they have also been building long term as well. And I think they also understanding having a more neighborhood local model that is on a year round basis.
There's a whole lot of listening going on, which is well overdue. Angela Lang is our guest. We will take this break and talk more about Black Leaders Organizing for Communities next. You're up north.